Now, if you're a mum or a dad, you'll be able to help me a little bit with this one. One in five parents are ditching classic fairy tales such as Snow White and the Seven Dwarves and Cinderella in favour of modern, perhaps more politically correct, less scary stories. And the reason, well, Little Red Riding Hood, for instance, they don't like explaining that a young girl's grandmother was eaten by a wolf. Goldilocks sends out the wrong message about stealing, apparently. Now, I always understood fairy tales to be make-believe, but at the same time, parents don't like Jack and the Beanstalk because it's deemed too unrealistic. So, I don't have kids. If you're a parent, maybe you feel a little differently to me, but I think it's political correctness gone mad. But let's introduce our panel to discuss this. We have John McNamee from Eason's in Portlaoise. He is president of the European Booksellers Federation. And also we have the pleasure of Dolores Keaveney, children's author and artist from Mullingar. Guys, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Thanks very much indeed.
Now, it's 30-odd years, John, since I heard fairy tales. How have they changed since the days of Cinderella, Goldilocks, Rapunzel and so on?
They haven't really changed all that much. I mean, you have to remember what's happening here. This is make-believe. And I just read in that report that one of the stories parents or modern day parents seem to be migrating to is the Gruffalo. Now, the Gruffalo is a monster, and he's got scaly feet and things on his back, and he's got a poisonous wart on his nose, which is green as well. Okay, so, and that story goes where the Gruffalo tries to terrorize everyone in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
From the mouse and the squirrel and everything else. And then the Gruffalo gets his comeuppance because the mouse and the fox say, well, our favourite food happens to be Gruffalo crumble.
Uh-huh.
So he gets his comeuppance and it's a story.
So is the Gruffalo the villain in this?
He's part villain, but for some reason, kids connect with the Gruffalo. And everywhere across this country, if you've anybody between 3 and 7, they will know a thing that's called the Gruffalo song. And there is a Gruffalo
song. Do you care
song.
To sing a bar?
No, I haven't. I'd need a tuning fork to get to get the key right. But kids connect. There are Gruffalo toys, which are very grotesque, and they're purple and green and brown and everything else, and big scaly things hanging out of them.
And I'll bet kids love them.
Kids absolutely love it, and so much so that the author was able to produce another book called The Gruffalo's Child. So this is moving on. Now, I picked up this morning in the shop some of the remastered Ladybird favourite tales. Now, everybody remembers they used to come in the little small hardbacks and they were tiny. And the artwork had become quite dated in them. And what they've done now is they've made them a larger format, a little bit like your books, and they've remastered all of the artwork. And they're absolutely brilliant. They're fantastically produced and they're brilliant value for money. So I'm afraid this is an abdication yet again. The whole process is an abdication. Society abdicating because they don't want to deal with issues.
What issues? What are we avoiding?
Well, we're avoiding the fact that we don't want to explain to children about Granny being eaten by a wolf. Granny didn't get eaten by a wolf. It's a story. But, you know, parents are always wanting to take, or one in five parents want to take an easy route, make life easy, not to have to explain anything, not to get into dialogue and discussion with the kids to say, well, you know, look, these things don't really happen. It's a story. Kids will always place a story in a story. It helps unlock their imagination. It helps them come to terms with things. And on the other side of it, I mean, the deeper psychological end of it, what we have here is we have a series of morals. We have a series of right and a series of wrong. We cannot go through life, any of us ever, without encountering a villain of some sort. Or, more often than not, we're going to meet really nice people. So,
but let me play devil's advocate and extend that a bit. The sense of right and wrong, you can argue, is learned behaviour. So if from a very early age you hear Goldilocks, and Goldilocks goes around and she's stealing the porridge, does that ingrain in young people a sense that it's okay to steal a little bit?
No, I don't think so. I think the moral of the story happens. You know, these stories do not have sad endings. These stories have happy endings. And generally, the villain gets his comeuppance. So it's not all right to steal porridge. Of course it's not. But the story unfolds and good wins out. I'm not aware of one fairy tale where the, you know, there is a moral winner in the story.
No, that's true. They all have a happy ending.
They're supposed to.
Yeah, they are supposed to. Yes, that's true.
What approach do you take, Dolores, when you're forming a story? Are you conscious of modern political correctness, or do you just try to go into the land of make-believe and see where it leads you?
You know, I'm very new to writing stories. I only started 4 years ago, but most of this... I have two small books. First one is If I Were a Bee, and it's really about a bee. And you could say, sometimes when I read this little book in libraries and schools, and sometimes the children say, oh, the bee is going to sting me, and, you know, I don't like bees, and I'm afraid of bees. But I think it's the way you read the book to children. You know, you could say the bee is lovely, it's brilliant, and it's sick, and it needs you to support it, and try and then explain to them the value of bees and what they are to society and how they pollinate blossoms and everything. And then the other one is a little story about a neighbour's hen who was lonely. A really true story. My grandchildren and I, we used to visit this little hen, and it's kind of a story of friendship. And if you have a friend, or if you have a friend, even a good book, you won't be alone. I didn't deliberately set out to... I had no plan in my head when I was writing them. And I just went along with... They're basically true stories. I find it difficult to kind of make up the stories, would you believe?
But do you set out when you're writing with the moral in mind?
No. No, I didn't. To be honest with you, I didn't set out when I was writing them. So, but I do know that I have five grandchildren, and my daughter is married and she has two children, and one of her little son is age 2.5, and he has this story about dinosaurs that have huge pop-up pictures in them. And he can name every dinosaur in that book, and he's not really afraid of it. So you could really say that was a terrifying book, because when I look at it, I say, oh, my God, how could a 2.5-year-old look at that and not be scared? But he's not scared. He loves it. And I think it's the way that his parents have read it to him and explained that dinosaurs, you know, that there's no fear in them. And also, I can understand what these people, you know, the survey about the women who are the parents. Some, you really don't want to instill fear in children. And I know that some children are very sensitive. And you could, I suppose, it depends on the way you read them.
If you read depends on the age of the child
and
as well.
The age, exactly. Say from 3 and 4-year-old, it's very sensitive age. And, you know, I wouldn't like to read a story that would scare my grandchildren. And I know that some of them are more sensitive than others. Like, I have a little girl who's 7. She doesn't like scary stuff, and I wouldn't dream of reading anything scary to her. But she has a little brother, age 5, and he watches everything. And anyway, when you watch television, she'll look at all the stuff that's on television that it scared the life out of you. Do you know, nearly every programme, no matter how simple it is, has scary bits in it.
Actually, it's funny, most parents who have called us say the only consideration they have when picking up a fairy tale is how long is it? How long will it take to go through it? How many times will you be asked to read it again, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, but if you think many kids, when they're being read stories, they will want to go back to the same story. And they will ask, no, let's read this story again. And they'll almost know... They will know what's coming next. They'll always know it word by word. And there's a comfort value. And I think there's an awful lot more psychological things happening here for those parents who do take the time to read to their children. And what's happening is the child is generally placed on the lap of the parent, and the parent is speaking in a tone which is very, very nice and very, very comfortable. And for the period and duration of that story, that child becomes the center of that adult's universe, and the child knows that, and there's a connectivity there all of the time. But I'm just looking through one of Dolores's books here, and there's just more than the text, because Dolores is a very fine illustrator, illustrates beautifully. And I mean, there's four lines, there's two page spread here I'm looking at, there's four lines on one page, and then the rest is very well illustrated pictures. Now, there's an opportunity to go from the story here and to start to talk about the illustration. I can see a little ladybird nicely painted down here in the corner, mm-hmm. and you can ask the kid almost like, where's Wally? What else do you see in the story? What colour is that? What shape is it? Why is the hen lying down, do you think? And you can generate a whole series of side issues coming from those stories. You can address as well, if you identify things that the kids are uncomfortable with, or kids are interested in, you can identify things from the illustrations and go along a route which you can make up your own little moral story. I think it's about taking the time.
Therein lies the challenge, I suppose, for a lot of parents. It's interesting, you mentioned they almost know it word for word. There's a couple that we're friends with, and the mum seldom gets asked to read. It's always daddy. And daddy will sometimes be tired and he'll try to skip a page. And he'll be told, daddy, turn back. You've missed a page. And he'll never get away with it. But you can, I suppose, appreciate in some households it might be difficult at the end of the day to try and spend the time that you describe of looking at the pictures, analysing them, setting it up, allaying fears. And what's the way around that?
Find the off button of the television. We do allow the television almost an alter position in our lives. And it does have an off button. And kids given the opportunity to look at Nickelodeon or to look at something else will always take that option. What they're getting there is unfettered. It may be inappropriate. It may be age inappropriate. It may be content inappropriate. They may be flicking back over to MTV or something else. And you're not controlling what's coming in. Turn the thing off.
That's a good point. And a few people have raised it that you can control and present fairy tales in a way that you want your kids to receive them. Or at least you have more influence over it than the television. I remember there was a cowboy movie on when I was very young, and John Wayne was in it. And I think John Wayne got bitten by a snake, or somebody got bitten by a snake and died. And I, to this day, still have a fear of snakes. It's totally irrational. What were your favourite fairy tales when you were growing up, Dolores?
Well, to be quite honest with you, we didn't really get an opportunity. When we were young, I can't really remember my parents reading books to me, but I know that I read lots of books to my own children. I have three children, and I read all those fairy tales, Goldilocks, I read The Three Little Pigs, they loved it. And we had our shelves full of little ladybird books, and I had one book that I did buy for my son. He's touching the 40 stage this year, and it was called The Tiger Who Came to Tea. And it was, I thought it was...
And you still have it, so you've brought it in.
I have it here, I brought it in, and this is it.
And it's well used.
It's well used, but it's still available at the moment because I bought it from one of my grandchildren. Now, it's about a tiger who came in. Now, a tiger is very threatening, and seemingly came in for tea, but it didn't come in to eat the family, it just came in to eat the tea. And the little girl in the book, she just loved this tiger and fed it all the cakes and the buns, and in the end the tiger just left at the end, walked out and left, and it never came back. And I thought it was a fantastic story, and that was one of my favourite books to read.
Was there ever a fairy tale you had qualms about reading to your children or would have avoided?
No, none. I read. I used to read The Three Little Pigs, which was one of their favourites, and, you know, the little pig huffing, the big bad wolf coming and huffing and puffing and climbing up on the roof and falling down into a pot of boiling water, and he was killed in the end, and they all lived happily ever after.
Doesn't actually and, say he was killed, though.
Well, it didn't,
It doesn't say he was horribly scalded and had a long, slow, painful death. It doesn't say that. No. It just said that was the end of the big bad wolf.
That's exactly the way it ended.
Yeah.
And I still have some of those books, and I've passed them on. Little Red Riding Hood, the little Red Hen was another one, and lots of different books. There wasn't any books that I didn't feel like reading. Mm. And I did ask my son, one of them, had they any effect, any of these books, had they any effect on him? And he said no. And, I mean, they are classics. And
yeah, well, sometimes a little ignorance is a good thing. We know an awful lot these days about psychoanalysis and read into it too much, in my view, but nobody seems to have been scarred by getting the stories that we all got growing up.
Yeah, I can't recall anybody saying that Three Little Pigs really put me on the wrong road.
No. Nobody appeared before a judge for theft and said Goldilocks robbed porridge.
That's it, because it was right for the porridge to be robbed from the three bears. It's, you know, if you extrapolate this further, if you take this out further, you can actually see how nonsensical this stance seems to be. And, you know, if you look at all the teenagers that are reading Vampire Diaries, Stephanie Meyer's Breaking Dawn, Twilight, that whole series, does that mean we're going to have a generation of vampires?
Mm-hmm. I just came across a book on, I was just looking at the internet, and I came across a book that they were recommending. One was Go Away, Big Green Monster. And it said, die-cut pages to which bits of a monster are revealed are designed to help a child control nighttime fears of monsters. So the book was, for that purpose.
I see the other one that they're migrating to as well, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and a great story about that one. I think it's absolutely brilliant. George W. Bush, none other, was asked at one stage what was his most favourite book of all time, and he said it had to be The Very Hungry Caterpillar. What he didn't realise was he was 39 when it was first published.
No way. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
And
I'm not sure if George Bush is the greatest example of how adults develop having heard fairy tales. Somehow I think that might defeat the argument a bit.
That is funny, though. But look, this is, fairy tales are the realm of fantasy and make-believe. That's what it's about. You can use those in any moral way to educate your children, to overcome fears, to take moral stances on issues like sharing, on small issues, that are going to develop a moral backbone within those kids for life. And I think if you can't do that, okay, just read The Gruffalo.
Guys, I have enjoyed our conversation tremendously today. John McNamee from Easons in Portlaoise, Dolores Keaveney, children's author and artist from Mullingar. Thank you very much for coming in to us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks
You're welcome.
Us.
Thank you.